He then moved from the former monochord to the sound-producing instrument called the piano, and again, directing our attention to the vibrometer needles, he began to strike in succession the corresponding keys of the piano, which produced the same monotonous melody of five tones. During this time, the needles of the vibrometers indicated the same figures as before. 5 minutes had barely passed when, at a nod from the Haji, we looked at the flowers and saw that they had definitely begun to fade. And when, at the end of 10 minutes, the venerable Haji again stopped his music, there was nothing left in the pot but the withered stalks of the formerly flowering plant. Then the Haji sat down beside us again and said, "As my long years of investigation have convinced me, and as the science of Shat Kai Nirnis states, there do indeed exist in the world two kinds of vibrations, namely creative vibrations and momentum vibrations. Now, I have made clear by experiment that the best strings for producing creative vibrations are those made either of a certain metal or of goat gut. Strings made of other materials do not have this property, and the vibrations issuing from them, like those obtained from the flow of air, are purely momentum vibrations. In such a case, the sounds are produced by vibrations arising from friction with the flow of air and from the mechanical action of momentum." Haji Asvatstruv continued, "At first, we made our experiments with the aid of this vibrosho alone. But one day, when my friend Kerbalay Aziz Nuran was in the Bukharian town of X on business, he happened to see a grand piano at an auction of some things belonging to a Russian general who was moving away. And noticing that its strings were made of the very metal needed for our experiments, he bought it, and afterwards, with great difficulty, as you may imagine, had it brought up here into the mountains. When we had put this piano in place, we tuned its strings exactly according to the laws of vibrations indicated in the ancient Chinese science of Shat Kai Nirnis. To tune the strings correctly, we not only took as the basis the absolute do of the ancient Chinese scale, but also, as this science recommended, took into account the local geographical conditions, the atmospheric pressure, the form and dimensions of the interior area, the mean temperature of the surrounding space, as well as of this interior itself, and so on, and we even took into consideration the total number of emanations from the human beings who would be present during our proposed experiments. From the moment we had accurately tuned the piano in this way, the vibrations issuing from it did in fact acquire all the properties spoken of in that great science. I will now demonstrate what it is possible to do with the vibrations issuing from this ordinary piano by applying the knowledge of the laws of vibration attained by man." Having said this, he got up. He now brought an envelope, paper and pencil, from another part of the cave. He wrote something on the paper, put it in the envelope, and attached it to a hook hanging from the center of the ceiling. Then he sat down once more at the piano and, without saying a word, began as before to strike certain keys, which again produced a monotonous melody. But this time, in the melody, two sounds of the lowest octave of the piano were evenly and steadily repeated. After a little while, I noticed that it was becoming uncomfortable for my friend, the dervish Haji Boga Eddin, to sit still. and he began fidgeting with his left leg. Soon he began to rub his leg, and it was evident from the grimaces he made that it was hurting him. The venerable Haji Asvat Struve paid no attention to this, but went on striking the same keys. When at last he had finished, he turned to us and, addressing me, said, "Friend of my friend, will you please get up, take the envelope off the hook, and read what is written inside?" I stood up, took the envelope, opened it, and read aloud as follows. "On each of you, from the vibrations issuing from the piano, there must be formed on the left leg, an inch below the knee and half an inch to the left of the middle of the leg, what is called a boil." When I had read this, the Venerable Haji requested us both to bear the indicated places on our left legs. When we had done so, we saw a boil precisely on that spot on the left leg of the dervish Baga Eddin, but to the great amazement of the Venerable Haji Asvat Struve, there was nothing whatever to be seen on my leg. When Haji Asvat Struve ascertained this, he instantly leapt from his place like a young man and cried out very excitedly, "This cannot be!" And he stared fixedly at my left leg with the eyes of a madman. Almost 5 minutes passed in this manner. I must confess that for the first time on that planet I was at a loss and could not immediately hit upon a way out of this predicament. At last he came up to me and was about to speak, but he was so agitated that all at once his legs began to tremble so violently that he had to sit down on the floor, and he motioned me to sit down also. When we were seated, he gazed at me with very sorrowful eyes and in a penetrating tone spoke to me as follows. "Friend of my friend, in my youth I was a very rich man, so rich that no fewer than 10 of my caravans, each with no fewer than 1,000 camels, were constantly moving in all directions over our great Asia. My harem was considered by knowledgeable people to be the best and the most sumptuous on earth, and everything else was on the same scale. In short, I had in superabundance everything that our ordinary life can give. But gradually all this so wearied and surfeited me that at night when I lay down to sleep, I thought with horror that it would all be repeated the next day, and I would again be weighed down by the same wearisome burden. Finally, it became unendurable for me to live with such an inner state, and then, one day, when I felt the emptiness of ordinary life with particular force, the idea arose in me for the first time of ending my life by suicide. For several days, I thought about it quite cold-bloodedly, and as a result, categorically decided to do this. On the last evening, as I entered the room where I intended to carry out this decision of mine, I suddenly remembered that I had not taken a last look at the being who was half the cause of the creation and formation of my life. I remembered my mother, who was then still alive, and this recollection reversed everything within me. I suddenly pictured to myself how she would suffer when she learned of my death, and especially by such a means. Remembering her, I could see my dear old mother, as if in reality, breaking down in utter loneliness and inconsolable grief. And I was so overcome by pity for her that my sobs almost choked me. And it was only then that I recognized with my whole being what my mother meant to me, and what an inextinguishable feeling I should have had for her. From that hour, my mother became for me the source of my life. Thereafter, whatever the time, day or night, no sooner did I remember her dear face than I became animated with new strength, and the desire was renewed in me to live and to do everything in such a way that her life would flow agreeably for her. Thus it continued for 10 years, until she died of one of those pitiless diseases, and I was again left alone. After her death, my inner emptiness weighed me down more and more each day. At this point in his narrative, the glance of the venerable Haji Azvatstruv happened to light on the dervish Baga ed-Din. He jumped up hurriedly and said to him, "Dear friend, in the name of our friendship, forgive this old man for having forgotten to put an end to the pain caused you by the evil-bearing vibrations of the piano." Thereupon he sat down at the piano and again struck the keys, producing the sounds of only two notes, one from the highest octave and the other from the lowest, alternately, and as he did so he almost shouted, "Now, thanks to the vibrations produced by the sounds of this same piano, but this time good-bearing ones, let the pain of my faithful old friend come to an end." And indeed, 5 minutes had scarcely passed when the face of the dervish Baga ed-Din again cleared up, and not a trace remained of the enormous, horrible boil which had adorned his left leg. Then the dervish Haji Azvatstruv sat down beside us again, and having outwardly regained his calm, continued to speak. "On the fourth day after the death of my dear mother, I was sitting in my room in despair, wondering what would become of me, and just then, in the street near my window, a wandering dervish began chanting his sacred canticles. Looking out of the window and seeing that the dervish was old and had a benign face, I suddenly decided to ask his advice and immediately sent my servant to invite him in. When he had entered and, after the customary greetings, was seated on the mindari, I told him of the state of my soul without concealing anything at all. And when I had finished, the dervish became deeply thoughtful, remaining silent for some time. Then he looked at me steadily and said, as he rose from his place, 'There is only one way out for you. Devote yourself to religion.' Having said this, he walked away, intoning a prayer, and left my house forever. After he had gone, I again began to ponder. This time the result of my reflections was that the same day I decided irrevocably to enter a brotherhood of dervishes, not in my native country, but somewhere far away. The next day I began to divide and distribute all my wealth among my relatives and the poor, and 2 weeks later I left my native country forever and came here to Bukhara. Once in Bukhara, I entered one of the numerous dervish brotherhoods, selecting the one whose dervishes were known among the people for the austerity of their mode of life. Unfortunately, the dervishes of this brotherhood soon had a disillusioning effect on me, and I therefore transferred to another brotherhood. But there again, the same thing happened. Finally, I was admitted into the monastery whose sheikh set me the task of devising the mechanical stringed instrument I have already told you about. After that, as I've already told you, I became passionately interested in the science of the laws of vibration and have studied it increasingly up to the present day.